My name is Deb Quintel. I'm the Director of Curriculum Development for CALI, and I'm speaking today with Professor Douglas McFarland at Hamline University. Welcome, Professor McFarland.
Thank you, Deb. Glad to be here.
Let me just start off by asking, what's this case method or Socratic dialogue that I hear mentioned about law school? It seems that lectures would be more efficient.
The case method was developed a long time ago, back in the 1870s, by Dean Christopher Columbus Langdell at Harvard Law School. The whole idea is the author of the case book selects cases, and each case is supposed to illustrate a point of law to the student who reads it. And most of the time, these cases develop in sequential order. And a student should ask himself or herself, why has this case been selected? What am I supposed to get out of it? Sometimes, of course, the cases are selected because the author thinks they're wrong, so everyone should not be accepted uncritically. The Socratic method goes right with it. The whole point is, just like Socrates asks questions, the professor asks questions, and as is said, you teach yourself the law. It sure would be a lot more efficient for the professor just to lecture about what the law is, but the idea is what goes in too easily comes out too easily, and if you have to work a little harder at trying to understand what the case is supposed to be teaching you, you'll understand the whole process a lot better. And, of course, that way you'll be able to determine for yourself. You'll read a whole case and determine what's relevant, what isn't relevant, what are the important facts, what's the issue of law, you know, does the court's reasoning make any sense, all those sorts of questions.
How much time do you suggest that students spend preparing for each class? And also, what do you suggest they do to prepare for class? I know a lot of folks recommend briefing a case. How about students who got by in undergrad just by reading their textbook? What do you suggest?
Well, I don't think that's going to work very well in law school. I absolutely recommend briefing every case, certainly for the entire fall semester and probably for the entire first year. I would recommend, and I don't know how much time it's going to take, it certainly takes a lot more time up front than it will after you've been at it for a few months, because you start learning vocabulary and you can read things faster and you understand what courts are saying and so on. Anyway, I recommend reading a case through to get the sense of it, and then reading it through again, at that point maybe underlining it and trying to read it real carefully as to what the court meant. And then probably a third time through, then you brief it. And you sometimes really have to work on those briefs. Some cases brief rather easily and some cases brief pretty hard. It's even hard for me today after 35 years out of law school to brief some cases. But it's well worth the effort. That's really what you are learning in the early days of your law school experience, is how to brief cases, which means how to identify the relevant facts and how to state the law properly.
Let me ask a question about class size. A lot of students starting law school are from colleges where their classes may have been smaller, 20, 30, 40 students. And typical law school classrooms, I understand, have maybe upwards of 150 students in them. Any suggestion for what students can do to get the most out of a large class? And what should a student be doing when the professor is engaged in conversation with another student?
Law schools certainly do use large classes. Here at Hamline, our typical first-year class is about 60 to 65, but when I went to law school myself some years ago, I was in classes of 120, and I've taught classes as large as 150. So clearly, the professor can't get around to each student very often. With the Socratic method, the whole idea is when another student is answering a question, the other student, instead of just sitting there relaxing, should be formulating an answer. In other words, how would I answer if the professor had asked me this question? And everyone should listen carefully to what the other students have to say. I know some students think, well, if the professor says it, maybe I'll take it down in my notes, and if some other student says it, it doesn't make much difference, so I can kind of tune out at that point. But that's a mistake. I say listen to everything your fellow students say and evaluate it critically, just as you try to figure out what you would say if the question were asked to you.
Why won't the professor often answer a question that a student has in class?
Well, that's part and parcel of the Socratic method. The whole point of the Socratic method is to ask the students questions and let them or make them figure things out for themselves. Of course, the ideal Socratic method is not simply leading the student along by the hand and saying, well, what happened next? What happened next? You know, what it's supposed to be is a joint search for meaning and interpretation by both the student and the professor, and that's what it is in the best of it. But the so-called pure Socratic method, the professor is not supposed to answer any questions. Typically, you might respond to a student question, well, that's interesting, what do you think? Or you might say, well, that's interesting, what do you over there, Jones, think? That sort of thing. You just don't answer questions. Now, that isn't quite so true in most places anymore. Most places follow what we might call a modified Socratic method, so the teacher will answer a question from time to time, but still you don't want to get into too many questions answered, because the whole point of the Socratic method and the case method is for the student to learn the law, not for the professor to tell what it is.
It seems sometimes that a professor will ask questions of one student and just keep drilling the student, almost as though the professor wants to embarrass that student.
Yeah, it certainly can appear that way. I think what students need to remember is if the Socratic method is being used, and I think it is being used in most first-year law classes in most law schools, the professor is supposed to ask questions. Now, on the one hand, you don't want to ask a question that's too simple, like what date was this case decided, unless that has some further significance. On the other hand, you don't want to ask some complicated question that nobody can understand. The professor is trying to ask questions that guide the student, that lead the student to new insights. And, of course, the fact is the professor may have exactly in mind what insight is supposed to be, but the question may not be as clear as it seemed it was. So it may seem to be embarrassing. And the fact is it's hard to ask good questions. So I think if a professor is asking questions the student doesn't quite understand, it's certainly not trying to embarrass the student. It's maybe more inartfulness in the form of asking the questions. So no one is trying to embarrass the students. It's not personal. Students should not take it personally. We as professors are working with the students as a whole. We're asking questions. We're not trying to think, oh boy, what can I ask that will really embarrass this student? And in fact, a lot of times a professor will stay with a student. Now, let's say that you answer a question and you've got a wonderful answer. The professor says, okay, now what about this? On the other hand, let's say you've got a terrible answer. The professor says, well, okay, what about this? In other words, whether your answer is good or bad, you get another question. And oftentimes, if your answer is not much good, the professor will try to stick with you to give you a chance to redeem yourself. Some students might see that as kind of piling on or letting the student twist in the wind instead of letting him off the hook, but that's not what it is. It's trying really to be kind instead of cruel.
Let's talk about the student who comes into class well-prepared. They brief their cases. And then in class, the professor raises all kinds of questions that the student had not even thought about. The student comes out of class, and their notes are a jumble. What advice do you have for what students are supposed to be getting out of the class?
That's why they pay us the big bucks. yeah, don't I wish. The fact is that, again, it goes back to the Socratic method. If all we had to do was just lecture and tell the students what the law is, then the notes might be a lot clearer. But when you ask questions and the student is supposed to muddle through to the meaning of the cases, the notes are not going to be clear. And in fact, that is what we do in class. We try to provide new insights, new ways of reading the cases, new policy arguments that hadn't been considered for the student's consideration. I don't think it's important at all for the student not to have recognized this insight before class. The only important thing is to understand it when it's raised in class.
Well, how about the student who's been to several classes and they still seem to be lost at sea. Any advice?
I think the best advice, depending on the time of year, let's say the time of year is the beginning of classes up until about the middle of October or maybe even early November, the best advice is don't worry about it. That's the way the system works. The fact is you're learning a brand new field. You're using a method that does not tell you the answers. Everyone pretty much is in a muddle at the beginning of law school. Eventually, the light will go on. One would hope it goes on sooner rather than later, but the light will go on. And so the fact that, you know, we're a few weeks into classes and I just still don't understand, I'm not putting the cases together very well, don't worry about it. It's too early in the game. The light will go on.
Well, how soon should a student begin reading study aids or writing an outline for his final exam?
Certainly with regard to study aids, based on my previous answer, I would say not until the middle of the semester at the absolute earliest. The whole point is this: the law that you gain through the Socratic method is, as one writer said, it's supposed to be a formless deposit in the mind. You're not supposed to be learning individual legal principles as a primary goal. You're supposed to be gaining the way of legal thinking, this formless deposit. So, point is, you don't want to short-circuit that process. Let the muddle go on. It's hard to do, I'm sure. But let the muddle go on for a few weeks. Let your mind work through all these things. Don't immediately run to some study aid for clarity. I know when first-year students get to law school, about the first thing they do is run into a second- or third-year student who says, oh, you've got to get a commercial outline, you've got to get a horn book, you've got to get these commercial aids right away. And I think that's a big mistake. I say absolutely don't look at them until the middle of the semester. And at that point, fine, then start looking at those aids. And you can write your own outline. Maybe you could start that a little earlier. But with regard to your own outline, you know the whole value is in writing it. Once you've written it, you don't need it anymore.
You've probably looked at thousands of exams by this point in your teaching career. What's the single most important piece of advice that you would give to any new student about taking a law school exam?
My one piece of advice about writing law exams is going to seem rather simple-minded, but I think it's quite accurate. Your exam is going to be graded on how well you make an argument, and how well you argue it, how well you support it. So I say, think of your exam in exactly the same way you thought of junior high algebra class. You'd be in that algebra class, you'd look at the question, and it would say train A will leave at this time, and train B will leave at this time, and what time do they meet? And if you wrote down 1:34, and that was the right answer, how much credit did you get for it? And the answer is essentially nothing, because you didn't show your work. And that's exactly what law exams are like. You're not graded on your answer, you're graded on whether you show your work.
Do you have any final advice for law students in general? What key bit of information would you suggest they take with them as they start their law school career?
Well, beyond what I've said, I think one general piece of advice is not to be short-sighted. Now, people go to law school for all kinds of reasons. They want different kinds of careers, and so they have different goals and aspirations. But if a student aspires to, certainly to join a large law firm or to have a little bit easier time getting a job up front, the student wants to get good first-year grades. And one, I think, does not want to be short-sighted and get into too many other things. In other words, fine, you want to do some outside activities, but don't get into so many outside activities that you harm your studying for your classes. And the same goes for jobs. If you absolutely have to work, you have no money, you know, that's one thing. But I certainly would not take a job for another 10 hours a week just for the experience, because that's being very short-sighted. Put that 10 hours into studying your first-year classes, and you'll be far better off in the long run.
Professor McFarland, thank you very much for your advice.
You're very welcome, Deb. Hope it helps.
You are listening to Cali Radio. This has been a presentation from the Center for Computer-Assisted Legal Instruction. Please visit our website at www.cali.org to download additional podcasts from Cali Radio.